KBOO Community Radio is proud to help co-sponsor the Visegrad Group PDX Festival, November 9th from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. To celebrate the 95th anniversary of independence of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian nations, this one-day festival will share traditions, history, arts, and crafts, and national food of the Czech, Polish, and Hungarian communities within Multnomah County. Again, the Visegrad Group PDX Festival will take place at the Polish Hall, 3832 North Interstate Avenue, on Saturday, November 9th, from 1 to 7 p.m. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, November 6th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm. It is the political morning after, and there's good news and bad news from across the country and here in Cascadia. Yesterday, we neglected to talk in much detail about Oregon races and issues and ballot measures, and took a look up north to Washington State, and particularly Seattle, where the Monsanto legislation is, of course, on everybody's minds, and Initiative 522, as many people know, was defeated. It was not defeated necessarily by people. It was defeated by money. And you know what? If it can be defeated by money, we can deliver a victory with money. I'm going to tell you how. Without any money, you can still do that. It's not too late. And this measure 522, though it... this time around, the GMO people are, of course, claiming victory, but it's definitely not over. And we are going to be speaking later in the program with Stephen Zunis on Iran and America's very strange relationship, which, of course, again, looking at that relationship is a way of understanding how America understands money and how pretty much every aspect of our public lives has been corporatized at this point. And the only question left to ask really is it too late? And we'll be looking into that. First, though, the weather from around Cascadia. Occasional drizzle throughout the day with a high reaching 57, calm winds. Tonight, look for more rain. And later in the evening, it'll turn into a steady downpour from the looks of things. Steady temperatures around 53 for tomorrow, more rain. And we'll have a high of 54 early on, and then that's going to drop back and get cold for the rest of the day, around in the mid-40s. And the south wind, 18 to 21 miles an hour, with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Obviously, that's where the cold temperatures came from. And for Thursday night, it's 50-50 regarding showers. Lows around 44. Windy. Southwest wind, 11 miles per hour, gusting up to 20. The alternative forecast, pretty much the same advice from all quarters as we had yesterday. It's a waxing crescent leaf moon in Scorpio. The moon is 3 days old. And the advice from Synodic Biodynamic and Sidereal Forces is pretty much the same as it's been for the last few days. The Sidereal people, growers, suggest this with the moon in Scorpio. Good time for planting, germination, and strong, sturdy growth. So if you do have a mind to get out there and try winter gardening, and it's a good idea, it's fun, then now is a great time to get started because your efforts will be richly and amply rewarded. So, of course, we have to look at this. But by the way, Kshana Sawant did not do too badly, not shabby at all, in the city council race up in Seattle. More on that in just a moment. First, though, early results showed that Initiative 522 was leading and won in King County, I mean, won statewide, and running behind most of the counties reporting results. As of 8 p.m. last night, Clark County voters strongly rejected it. And as we know, that the fallout was that the initiative that prevents us from labeling agricultural products as GMO went down. But what do we do now? Here's what you can do. In Europe, people are very suspicious of genetically modified organisms. And many countries, in fact, ban these things outright. And they most certainly label things that contain genetically modified elements. People in the state of Washington were essentially bamboozled by the millions upon millions upon millions of dollars that flowed in to promote the silence. And what you can do about it is this. You go online. I had this with me a minute, but I'm going to put it up on the KABU website, and it's just too much, too many names, too many numbers to get into at the moment. But there are names, and there are numbers, and there are email addresses that you can use to warn and to make aware many of the agricultural trade representatives from various European nations that do have strict controls on genetically modified products and demand that food must be labeled as containing these things. It would be good to point out that if any one thing in an ecosystem is genetically modified, it doesn't sit there in that organism. It moves throughout the food chain. So, for pretty much any agricultural product from any given region is going to pollute everything else. This makes the agricultural products of Washington State, apples and so forth, wheat, corn, and some of the more exotic new types of agricultural products that are being grown now, all of those things, everything is suspect. And buyers in European countries are not going to have it. And if the Cascadia of Oregon and Washington lose those European contracts for our agricultural products, the money that Monsanto and so forth spent on this recent election is going to be a mere drop in the bucket. These are agricultural states, particularly Oregon, we're talking about. If Europe turns its back on our products, there goes the economy. That alone ought to convince confused voters that we need to label and these things, that we need to control them. Okay, that said, moving right along. We have Stephen Zunis joining us this morning. Very happy to welcome him back to the KBOO airwaves, and particularly at this moment in time. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Oh, glad to have you back. So as people across the country are distracted by Chris Christie's huge triumph and McAuliffe's triumph as well, many of these elections, what goes on behind the scenes? Now is a great time to look at America and Iran's strange relationship and the way in which both the left and the right seem to be piling on with this vindictive, suspicious rhetoric. It's Can you talk a bit? I want to ask you about AIPAC, of course, and how that any type of agreement or any conversation between Iran and the U.S. is seen by AIPAC as a great threat to their long-term agenda. And that would be my guess. Can I ask you what you think the positioning is and why the vicious rhetoric?
Well, just a little background. The Obama administration has been engaging in a degree of rapprochement with Iran in recent weeks. The foreign minister and the U.S. Secretary of State have met. President Obama had a brief phone conversation with the Iranian president when he was here in the United States for the United Nations General Assembly. And there are beginnings of the talk of an outline of a tentative partial agreement where Iran would cease enriching uranium beyond a certain percentage, which would therefore make it impossible for them to develop nuclear weapons. In other words, they could still enrich uranium for nuclear power and for medical purposes, etc. And in return for this partial agreement, there would be a partial lifting of sanctions. The U.S. is also, of course, pushing for them to stop enriching uranium altogether, and there are a bunch of other concerns. But at least, you know, getting for a partial agreement, a partial lifting of sanctions. But instead, what we're seeing in Congress, not just by the Republicans, but by a sizable number of influential Democrats as well, including Senate Foreign Relations Committee Chairman Robert Menendez, Senator Patty Murray of Washington, Chuck Schumer of New York, and others, they are pushing for an increase in sanctions, despite having a more moderate president and opposing outright any kind of reduction of sanctions. And basically, they're saying no compromise whatsoever. All or nothing. They have to bend to our will, and if there can't be a negotiated settlement, the only option is war. And so this has put the president in a difficult position, having both the Republican right and members of his own party gunning after him like this. Now, in terms of forces behind it, certainly the American Israel Public Affairs Committee and other right-wing Zionist organizations have been pushing for a confrontational line. This whole idea is that the more Iran becomes the focus and less Palestine is the focus, the more sympathy for Israel, because the Israelis can try to make a case that they are subject of this kind of threat. And indeed, a recent summit between Netanyahu and the Israeli Prime Minister and President Obama, Palestine didn't even come up. It was all about Iran. So this is certainly in Israel's favor. But there are also other elements. I mean, the United States, of course, has wanted to control and put down Iran for many decades, going back to the 1953 coup of their last democratic government, the Mohammad Mossadegh, and installing the Shah as an absolute monarch. The U.S. training of the SAVAK and the widespread systematic torture, other interventions in that part of the world. So certainly AIPAC is one factor, but it's a lot of it's the old right-wing interests, the imperialist interests, the oil companies, the other forces that have shaped U.S. Middle East policy for decades.
So those on Patty Murray, for example, these are very disturbing. We see this sort of thing. When you have to ask whether AIPAC is dangling campaign money in front of some of these, or influencing campaign contributions for future elections for some of these people, It does always seem to be about the money. But if Iran continues the direction it's going, it's a very modern state. It is more than willing to engage with the rest of the world, wants to engage with the rest of the world. This, although America, the official party line and the face on it would be that this is all in everyone's best interest, but it seems that it might not be under the surface. How does America actually view a successful Iranian state?
Well, the if you go back to the national security documents of the the Bush administration. There was talk about of essentially American hegemony, that not only would the United States prevent the a rival superpower from coming to the fore, but even any regional rival. I mean, it was called full-spectrum dominance, militarily, politically, geopolitically, economically. We don't want to have any kind of rival. And the thing about Saddam's, the only countries in the Middle East that could really play that role, that is, that had a sizable, educated population, adequate water resources and oil wealth, was Iraq and Iran. We saw what we did to Iraq.
Yeah.
And Iran is the other rival.
Now, in the crossroads. Stephen, hang on a moment there. We're fresh out of time. I heard this, they're bringing up the theme music, so I apologize for that. We have to let you know. Thanks very, very much. Stephen, so this has been our guest this morning, of course, a professor at the University of California. And thank you very, very much for joining us again today. It's been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, November 6, 2013, the day after the elections. Tammy has engineered the show today, recently back from traveling throughout Iran. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, Fukushima at a critical moment as pro-nuke scientists still declare that nuclear power is the real answer to the future's clean energy needs. Also, the fight to keep Edward Snowden